Chapter 12.
Alex!
Horace shouted, and his voice sounded high and thin, in a way I'd hardly heard from the usually overconfident Falcon Man. He also seldom called me Alex, so I knew he was worried, but I was busy still reeling from having fallen 10 feet to reassure him I was all right. Thankfully, I managed to open my eyes without too much issue, and I realized the Monkey Man had met the business end of my blade and was probably dead before we hit the ground. Unfortunately, Horace didn't know I wasn't the one bleeding, so he worked himself into a lather as he hauled the corpse off me and then began searching me for any fatal wounds. The rest of the word rasped into silence, since my lungs were still trying to remember how to function.
Doc, hell! Where are you wounded, Al?
He asked with a faint quake in his voice.
There's so much blood! Not mine!
I wheezed as he helped me sit up, and then he smacked me on the back. I coughed and cleared my throat, and finally my seized lungs began working again.
Thanks. Mercedes, don't scare me like that again, he said,
and he placed a hand over his heart like it had remembered how to start beating again.
Sorry,
I said, as I gazed all around the banquet hall. Most of the fighting was done, and those who were part of the illusionist troop who weren't dead were now being taken into custody by the palace guard.
How did you figure it out, by the way?
Horace asked as he helped me up to my feet. I had to breathe carefully through my nose for a second as my entire body screamed in protest at how fast I moved. One thing was for sure, falling straight back from that height did not do me any favors.
Actually, I heard someone sneeze above us and figured that's where the cube must have been,
I said, as I recalled the odd displaced noise that ended up being the key to everything.
Ah, the old invisible but not soundproof mistake,
he said sagely as he stroked his chin.
Amateurs.
I laughed and then wheezed to a stop when the motion hurt too much.
What I want to know is how they got the damn thing to float.
Same here,
Mech's voice rumbled behind me, and I whipped around to see the slightly battle-worn Ramlord clutching his wife on one side and holding his daughter in his other arm. The little deer girl lifted her head from where she'd hidden it in her father's chest and blinked at me with her big wet eyes, and the sight of her missing shoe reminded me just how brave this little pistol really was. I cast my eyes about and spotted the silvery slipper lying upside down on the floor near where my sword had fallen earlier, so I went to pick it up and return it to its rightful owner. "Your daughter saved my life, Gavlane," I said, as I took the toddler's little foot in my hand, so I could put the shoe back on like she was a miniature Cinderella. With antlers. Cinderella?
She did she?
The Ramlord asked as his smile went supernova.
What did she do?
I was almost a goner when Mira came up with the perfect distraction by throwing one of her shoes at my attacker's face,
I relayed to the pair of proud parents. And I winked at Mira when she blushed so hard the smattering of coppery freckles on her face disappeared. Then I took her hand and bowed deeply. Madam, I am forever in your debt. She giggled when I straightened from my bow, and then she jettisoned herself out of her mother's arms and into mine.
No mean hurts can hurt my Alex.
I chuckled as I held her close, and over her little shoulder I spied my two wives as well as the Mech sisters making their way over to us. From what I could tell, they were okay, but a little bruised and battered. But when they got closer, I could tell something was missing. Or rather, two very important somethings.
Where are Jenner and Rylan? I asked immediately, as the rest of the crew approached us and everyone glanced around.
And that traitor, Bartus,
Regent Siskern growled as he came up next to Mech with his new wife wrapped in his arms like he would be hard-pressed to ever let her out of his sight again.
He must pay for his crimes.
Ames, can you help us out? I asked the Oryx woman, and handed Mira back to her mother.
I will search for both of them.
She nodded and then crouched down to place her palm on the floor of the banquet hall so she could do her seek-and-find thing. Her eyes flashed nearly white, and she tilted her horned head as if she was listening to something.
Finally, her eyes faded back to their normal dove gray, and she stood up. "What is it?" I asked.
"I looked for traces of that Bartus fellow, too, but something is wrong."
She trailed off and started for the opposite end of the hall until she stopped in front of the far wall. She then pressed her ear against the wall and tapped twice.
"What is she doing?"
Siskern asked. But Anwar shushed the raptor man.
"Listen!"
Amaya suddenly gasped.
"I hear something."
Practically all of us hit the wall and pressed our own ears against it to see what she was talking about. At first I couldn't hear anything, but then I pressed a palm into my other ear to block out the din of the large hall, and there it was. A very faint pounding.
"What is that?"
Horace asked, when all of us pulled back from the wall.
"Is that them?"
"Yes,"
the augur woman said as her eyes shimmered again.
"I'm sure of it. My question is, how did anybody get out of the hole in the first place?"
Shay chimed in with her hands on her hips.
"Those doors remained shut the whole time."
"What about a servant's entrance?"
Mech asked.
"On Nata, it was a classic building practice to design invisible entrances in the ballrooms and banquet halls so the servants could come and go without being in the way."
My uncle might know,"
Siskern said, and waved over the man in question from where he was talking quietly with Issa.
"What can I do for my esteemed friends?"
Gris said as he sauntered up.
"Ambassador, I owe you for your fast thinking."
"All we need to know is if there's some sort of servant's entrance around here," I asked the dino man. Gris stroked his neck frill in thought as he examined the wall in front of us.
"I believe I remember something of the sort around here somewhere. Grekis, Bartus, and I used to play in the servants' corridors when we were lads."
The Terran Asher Lord then began to feel along the wall with his two hands until something clicked, and a small panel popped out that opened to reveal a narrow passage. Instantly, the faint pounding that could be heard rang out at full volume, and I wasted no time in rushing forward toward the frantic sounds.
"Hello?"
I called. And suddenly the pounding ceased, and I could hear Jenner's muffled voice yell out from a little farther down the corridor.
"Master Alex!"
the koala man shouted.
"We're in here!"
"I'm coming, Mr. Jenner!" I called back, as the corridor came to an end. "Where are you guys?"
"Storage cupboard!"
His voice floated from behind the locked door at the very end.
"Is Rylan with you?"
Zoe asked.
"Is he okay?"
"Rylan is with me,"
Jenner responded, but my catwife and I didn't miss the fact that he didn't answer the second question, and my uneasy feeling grew. "Stand clear," I warned, as I backed up a few steps. Then, without further ado, I slammed my shoulder into the door and broke it open in a shower of splinters.
"Oh, my,"
Amaya said from behind me as she took in the scene before all of us. Jenner was sitting on a stack of half-broken crates and looked disheveled with his missing monocle and ripped green jacket. And he stared down at the large and very dead Brontosaurus man.
"Is that Bartus?"
Siskern asked in shock as he looked at the jagged slice across the man's long neck and all the blood. I tuned out the rest of the conversation when I finally spotted Rylan huddled in the far corner of the room along with Maz, who was sitting silently beside him. They both looked shocked, but Rylan looked almost catatonic with his knees drawn up to his chest and staring at the dead man with a hollow stare.
"Rylan," I whispered. My boots crunched as I stepped around the dead Asher, and I saw there were shards of glass everywhere.
When I glanced around for the source, I saw there was an old broken mirror smashed to hell due to the apparent confrontation that had taken place, and my frown deepened. And finally, as I crouched down in front of my catatonic son, I saw that in his fist was the largest and most jagged mirror piece, still dripping with blood. It wasn't hard to put two and two together after that.
"Where is that wretched Bartus?"
I heard Major Tharfin's booming voice from out in the corridor a moment before the dome-headed man himself came into the room as well.
"Mozzie, sweetness!"
"Uncle!"
Maz cried out, and she sprang up from her spot and threw herself into his arms.
"What is the meaning of this?"
he asked as he looked around the room.
"What happened?"
"That's what I'd like to know," I murmured, as I gently tried to rouse my son from his fugue state. I glanced down at his hand where he was still clenching the makeshift dagger, and I saw how some of the blood oozing off it was some of his, due to how tightly he was still holding it, as if the dead man might spring up again at any second.
"Maybe I can illuminate some of the situation," Jenner said,
and I was grateful for him once more, considering the kids didn't seem like they were in any fit state to rehash the ordeal.
"I wasn't here for the start, but I can guess what probably happened. This young lady was kind enough to tell me that Lord Bartis attempted to snatch her away during the confusion, because I saw him enter this secret passage. It took me a bit longer than I liked to follow because of all the commotion, but when I finally chased after him, I stumbled across Rylan and Moz fighting Bartis. I tried to help, but in the frenzy the door was knocked shut, and then jammed closed after the big oaf slammed into it."
"He broke the mirror over there,"
Moz added in a deadpan voice.
"And then, Rylan..."
Rylan shuddered and closed his eyes as his grip on the sharp object tightened. More drops of blood fell to the floor, and I wondered how he didn't feel it. "I see. You knew Bartis was going to hurt Moz, hmm?" I said in a soothing timbre directed at Rylan. For a second, I didn't know if he was hearing me, but after a moment, he gave a stiff nod. "And then Mr. Jenner came in, and you knew he would be a target too, right? So you did what you had to do." I moved more into his line of sight, and I blocked the view of the man he'd killed in order to get him to snap out of the dark thoughts no doubt swirling around in his head. Killing a person, no matter how much the bastard may have deserved it, came with its own weight. And if I could have anything, I would have it so my son never needed to take a life. If we were in my world, I could have potentially shielded him from this, but we were not in my world. This was Aventol, and unfortunately violence and killing was almost unavoidable. The best I could do for him was just be there for the fallout like this, but the fact he'd yet to say a single word had me floundering. Luckily, before I could lose all faith in my abilities as a father, he blinked once, and then he focused his gaze on me for the first time since I'd entered the small storage cupboard.
"I heard him,"
he whispered, and I leaned forward so I could hear him better.
"He wanted to do things to Moz, and I..."
He choked and gagged, but then he hissed as he finally noticed the shard of jagged mirror glass in his hand. "Shh," I soothed when he cried out, and then I caught his wrist so I could gently pry his stiff fingers away. The makeshift knife clattered to the ground, and suddenly I had my arms full as Rylan launched himself at me. He didn't make any noise, but he shook violently, and I could feel a telltale dampness start to bleed through my tunic where he'd buried his face in my chest.
"You did good, kid," I murmured into his messy crown. "I'm proud of you. And Moz and Jenner are both okay. You did the right thing."
"I killed him,"
he croaked into my shirt.
"I slashed his throat."
"I know," I said, as I rubbed his back. And without thinking, I dropped a kiss on the top of his shaggy head. "You did good." Zoe then crouched down next to both of us, and Rylan pulled back so he could look at her.
"Cute,"
she said simply, as she stroked his tear-streaked face.
"Mom,"
he sobbed, and the Catwoman gathered him in her arms so she could now comfort our son the way only a mother could. Once I knew the crisis was averted for now, I left them to it and stood so I could join the rest of the conversations taking place behind me.
"You're sure the illusionist troop are pirates?"
Gris had just asked the Major.
"My intel is sound," the large Terran said with a nod. "My lieutenants were able to persuade some of the jugglers for information. They were commissioned by Bartis some time ago when he realized the Ascension Accord was a sure thing. He was going to leave Ter along with the pirates, who were going to transport all of their stock to the traders so we could make off with some premium coin."
"So that is why they only picked female volunteers for the demonstration," Horus said with a disgusted scowl. "Pathetic. It's good he's dead."
"The only thing I'll rue is not killing him myself,"
Tharfin growled as he continued to hold his niece against his side. Zoe had managed to get Rylan up to his feet, even though he had to lean on her pretty heavily. Then Shay came up on his right side and carefully took his injured hand in hers so she could heal it.
"The way I see it, this young lad has done us all a great service,"
Gris said, and took a step toward my son so he could salute him.
"Thank you, Mr. Dahl."
Everyone else in the room followed suit by thumping their right fists over their hearts. Rylan just stared at all of them in mild surprise. His face was still pretty pale with shock, so his lack of response didn't surprise me so much as it worried me, and I found Zoe's eyes. She nodded imperceptibly, and both Shay and Zoe began to escort Rylan out of the cramped room already starting to stink of the corrupt pervert. Before he left, he was stopped by both Maz and Tharfin, as they each gave him a fierce hug. And then my wives took him away.
"Come on," Regent Siskern said as he gave a kick to the corpse for good measure. "We have the troop members who didn't manage to die in custody. As we speak, we are rallying for a quick trial and could use a good augur mage."
"We would be much obliged,"
Amaya chimed in as her sister nodded in agreement.
"Lord Mech,"
Gris said, as all of us began to make our way back to the banquet hall.
"Would you be amenable to joining me on this council of retribution?"
"Absolutely," the Ramlord said. "The moment they tried to kidnap citizens of Nata makes them enemies of my house as well. Justice will be served."
When we entered the hall, there was a group of interesting scientist-type Terrans examining the still-floating cube. While several of the upper concubines and lower miners were holding some of the troop members in custody.
"What shall we do with this scum?"
Lieutenant Virtus asked as he shook Lord Licorice by the scruff of his neck.
"That remains to be seen,"
Major Tharfin told his second as he glared at the ruby-bedecked Fruit Loop.
"My fellow Terrans!"
Gris boomed around the large banquet hall loud enough to get everyone's attention.
"Lord Bartus's treachery has been revealed, and I am giving all of you this one chance to come forward if you are involved with him and his most nefarious plot to abscond with our womenfolk. If you do the honorable thing and reveal yourselves now, I may grant you leniency."
The silence remained for several long seconds, in which no one spoke or moved a muscle, even though several glances slid to the exit now being guarded by more of Tharfin's men.
"Very well,"
Siskern said, and then nodded at Amaya and Anwar to proceed. What happened next was a truly mega-awesome demonstration of the Augur Mage's combined powers in full force. First, the sisters linked hands as both their eyes took on that eerie, otherworldly glow. Then, while they were still connected, they both crouched as one unit so Amaya could press her palm against the ground again. She was as still as a statue, but the energy coming off her in waves was potent and caused the hair to stand up on my arms as if there were an electrical storm in the atmosphere. Just before I was convinced the very air was going to burst into flames, the Augur Mage stood. Then, with her eyes still glowing their technicolor array, Anwar held out her glowing red palm and swept it over the captive audience.
"May justice compel you,"
the Augur Mage pair said in a shared monotone voice that was the stuff of nightmares. Suddenly, three individuals were highlighted in the same red light as the Ibex woman's hand. And when she clenched her fist, the men staggered toward the center of the hall like they'd lost all control over their limbs. But going by their terrified expressions, this was the last place they wanted to be headed.
"Seize them!"
Gris commanded. And some of his concubine guard, including the pink-haired Issa, came up to hold the men.
"You three, announce yourselves to the assembled court."
The defectors looked like they would remain silent until death. But one gesture from Amaya had the first man, a weaselly, skink-looking motherfucker, blurting out all of his information as if he had a bad case of diarrhea of the mouth.
Lord Hervin!
He panted.
"Rank 2, shipbuilder. Bartus was going to give me a cut of the gold if I gave him a ship from one of my workshops."
"What about you?"
Gris asked the next man in line, who resembled a trike with only one of his three horns still intact. He was also wearing the same insignia of two overlapping circles like the rest of the scientist types, and the Terran Lord made a good point to glance down at the emblem.
I am Jeddus,
the trike man gritted out.
Rank 4, Professor of Natural Sciences.
What do you have to say for disgracing the noble Terran Academy like this?
Siskern interjected.
Lord Bartus promised me gold beyond my dreams if I was able to engineer something that could make the container float in the air,
he explained as he pointed to the cube.
Before the ceremony, I had the workers place powerful magnets in the floor and told them it was for something else. There is a small device in my pocket which activates them.
I'll take that then,
Issa said, as she retrieved the small handheld item from him that looked like a garage door remote without any buttons.
And you?
Gris asked the next man in line, with the features of some kind of spiky reptile.
Lord Caxus,
he spat out begrudgingly.
Rank 3, Palace Marshal. I offered him access to a squalor of his choice for the chance to take over minding the lowish scum he kept at his disposal.
What does that mean?
Lord Mech asked with a dark scowl.
Means old Barty had certain predilections pertaining to torture when it came to the lowish,
the man named Caxus said with a sinister glee. It seemed as if Amaya didn't really have to force him to speak anymore, because now that the jig was up, he apparently didn't mind sharing.
Every now and again, Bart and I would take a little trip by squalor to the lower sea, pick up a ripe little scatling for us to have fun with.
How dare you!
Leader Zair thundered as he came to the forefront of the crowd.
You've been harvesting our people so you may maim and torture them for your own sick pleasure.
My stomach churned at the way Caxus just laughed out a rusty laugh.
I've heard enough, Griff said. How about you, Lord Mech?
I agree, the Ramlord said, and turned to his sisters. What say the Ogre Mage?
Our findings are the same as what has been spoken by the accused,
Amaya answered, and the two of them returned to normal.
Whatever shall we do for recompense, then?
Gris asked, as he opened up the dialogue to the room at large.
What is a fair punishment, people of Tyr?
Death! Death!
The crowd instantly started chanting, until someone added on the phrase,
By ocean!
And then the chant changed to,
Death by ocean!
Horace sucked in a sharp breath next to me, and I turned to him with a puzzled frown. Why isn't anyone challenging him to a duel? I asked over the din.
Engaging in the rite of the duel is considered an honor, even if the duelist being challenged is a mega bastard, the Falcon Man explained. But there are some types of corruption where the chance of redemption through dueling is not even an option, because of how disgraceful that person's crimes are. In that case, only the goddess can judge them and mete out punishment.
For all three of them, I questioned. Caxus, yeah, he definitely needs to die in a horrible way, but the other two?
It is not up to us, he said, since the angry crowd was on the verge of turning into an angry mob if something didn't happen soon.
Terrans value their kin above all else.
Horace and I jumped slightly at the sound of Thassa's voice, and I wondered how long he'd been standing behind us.
To hear that these men were in a plot to break up families and sell our women and children is unforgivable. Horace is correct. None of these men deserve the glory of dying in a duel.
It is decided,
Gris cried out, and raised his palms up so the audience would settle down.
For their crimes, the three men will be stripped of their titles, their duelist stones shattered, and then thrown to the ocean Mercedes.
At this declaration, the whole hall erupted into chaos.